Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Listen to Fresh Off the Field on your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Niche and Footy with Sam Wykes and Chinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora and welcome everyone to Niche and Footy, the best place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tinero Arona, and alongside me each week, I have my co-ie, Sammy Wykes. Sammy, how are you today,
big
my brother?
Big T. How good was the footy on the weekend?
Mate, some great games, great moments.
You know, you got the Panthers, right? You said they're going to come back and have a resurgence this year, so they're on fire. Where did you have the Wires, though, before we get into our footy chat?
I had them top eight.
You did have them top eight,
Yeah, I had them top
you?
Eight. Mate. We're only round three.
I know, but they looked a good so
they are
far.
At the top of the NRL ladder, though, so I'll give them that after three games.
Take a screenshot right now, Warriors fans. But juicy stuff happening in the NRL. We also have round six of Super Rugby Pacific. Not the best weekend for our Pacific Island brothers in Fiji and for the Drua and Moana Pacifica.
Both teams went down.
My lock was the Drua, so that didn't come to fruition.
Yes, your lock-in from last Friday.
Anyway, all good. We'll dive into that one, but we also have a big guest with dancing feet, and I mean that in the most respectful way, big Fotu Aulua.
I thought you were going to say Roger Tuivasa-Sheck.
He's got great feet. Well, think of someone that's like 125 kilos, but with feet like Roger. Deadly combination, don't you think?
Union player. Shock.
He's played for the Brumbies. He's a back rower. He's played in Toulon. Fun fact, he went to Toulon the time when Sonny Bill left the Bulldogs and went to Toulon. You know, when he broke his contract?
Also, they played together?
Played together. So he's been coached by Tana. So he's got a very close relationship with Tana Umanga. He's played in Japan. And now he's doing some amazing things in the coaching space around making sure that especially – our Pacific Island players don't just rely on their talent and don't just rely on their size to get through the contact. He's given him the art of the dancing feet to find a weak shoulder, get through contact, and having some footwork to go along with their size. So we have him on. So if you're a coach, if you're a player, that's a chat for you.
Say his full name again.
Fotu Aulua.
But like, full name?
Oh, no, I don't know how to say his whole name.
Fotunu Upole. Aulua.
Okay, so when we get him on, when we get him on, can you
Fotunu Upole Aulua. Aulua. Aulua.
We're gonna get there. By the time he comes on, we're gonna have it down pat.
AKA Fotu. Right.
Easy as, but that's our show. Let's rip in.
Moment of the week.
Well, Sammy, I thought we would our moment of the week. You know, we had multicultural round across the NRL in round three where we got to celebrate the number of different heritages that each player represents, both not only in NRL but also NRLW. And how many from memory, Sammy, last Friday, how many different 66. Heritages?
Yeah, unreal stats. And yep. I love NRL that it's so diverse.
So it was cool to see the number of different flags and, you know, people representing their cultures, their backgrounds, and different clubs doing different things across the weekend and across the week. But one thing that caught my eye was the Tongan boys from the Manly Sea Eagles. They sang a hymn in front of their team, and I thought we'd just share it here on Niche and Footy. Keep singing.
Nah, that's all I got. That's a famous Tongan hymn, that one. You know, that's the one that gets sung by the players and also around the grounds when we have pack champs, and that's where everyone knows that hymn. And it's pretty cool to see the boys in their tupenu and their ta'ovala sharing a bit of their culture with the rest of the team.
What I love about this post, though, they posted on social media on the Manly Sea Eagles. Head down to see the full video. But there were a couple comments in the comment section from
always has to be from the boys,
from former teammates and all the boys just giving a bit of
that's just a bit of banter,
you know,
proud, but at the same time, shame.
I seen there was one where they were saying, "Lehi, get off the mute button."
Yeah, it's funny because my wife was watching that, so when she saw Lehi and get to some of those points where you've got to go a bit lower or a bit higher, or if you know the lyrics, I'm not too sure, but just does that awkward scratch of the head to sort of like move away from the mic. When you think about the people that sing opera, there's like different ranges that you got to get to. So you've got the, I think it's soprano, you've got the tenor and the baritone and the bass.
Oh, the bass?
Yeah, that's the baritone and the bass, the lower one. So the tenor, which is the highest common voice for the male, it's like strong, it's like heroic tone. You're the tenor. Stop it. You're the tenor.
There was also one from Michael Cheekham.
Said, I saw that. He goes,
"Amos, can they turn your voice down? And can they turn your voice down a bit to so we are Tokiaho?" And he goes, It's out of tune.
It's out of tune. Hey, you know what? The boys had a crack. It's a hard ask. I think as well, you see, hard, big physical men show that softer side. But that's a beautiful thing about Tongan culture. Is that when it comes to harmonizing and singing those hymns and you hear the old folk other men in the back and they lead it straight away, oh, it's a beautiful sound when you get to go to the functions and hear that in all the churches.
What's this hymn about? Do you know?
Why did you have to ask me that question or put me on the spot?
You're Tongan? It's a Tongan hymn?
I know.
It would be one that they sing at church.
Yeah, it's definitely, and make sure you keep that in mind, it's going to be part of our Give Me Three.
What, church?
No, that hymn. So
what, the bass?
Don't worry about it. We'll wait till we get there. But that's enough of Moment of the Week. Well done to all the NRL teams involved for multicultural round.
Actually, before we get there, I know you had Sam Moa on the Pacific Sports Show this morning.
Yep.
He is the assistant coach for the Parramatta Eels NRL team. He's also been on our show here and we've got to interview him. But he shared some nice words this morning around how they recognised multicultural round. I'll let you do the honors.
Yeah, I thought he put it so well in the sense that they didn't go over the top with the celebrations of multicultural round because that's us anyway. We do that every week. We celebrate our cultures every week. So we just didn't want it to make it like a Christmas event where we did it for 1 week and then forget about it and wait till this time next year. This is who Parramatta are about. We love to celebrate our cultures. So he loves being a part of the four walls at Parramatta for that reason.
Shout out to Sammy Moa and the Parramatta Eels.
Hey, it's Payne Hussey from the Brisbane Broncos. You are listening.
We'll have to change that ID soon. It's Payne Haas or Hakeem Haas from the South Sydney Rabbitohs as of 2027.
2027. We'll have to get him back on air next year.
Absolutely.
See how all things are over there with Uncle Wayne Bennett.
Well, let's get into now the rugby league news and results, T. What caught your eye on this one?
Yeah, look, I just mentioned last Friday that I was really excited to watch the Roosters versus the Panthers. I actually got to go to this game in Sydney, and for the first 5 minutes, so my family, we live out in Western Sydney in the Penrith Panthers area. Obviously a former Rooster myself, and my dad loves the Roosters now, so we, half of our family go for the Roosters, the other half go for Penrith. So for the first 5 minutes, I'm there rubbing my father-in-law's head, going, yeah, because he's wearing a Panthers hat. After Rob Toya's try, and then pretty much from the first try that the Panthers scored to the end of the game, there was silence. There was silence.
No rubbing of the head?
There was no rubbing of the head. The Panthers, they were just...
Was he rubbing your head?
Nah, they actually kept it humble. You know why they kept it humble? Because they were surrounded by other Roosters fans
So we're not at home here.
The Panthers were just too strong, and they win this one 40 points to 4. Look, like I said, the Roosters did have a strong start, but there was one error that they made. And then since that error, the Panthers just took over. Tom Jenkins, he scored 4 tries. And then the Samoan animal, Bizza, Brian To'o. This happened right in front of me. So we're sitting in that corner. He gets the ball. It gets offloaded, passed all the way to his end. And then You just see him put it on the toe. And we're like, oh, sweet. Roosters player would dive on it. No, Bezza gets it again. He regathers the ball. And then the fullback comes across. Bezza puts it on his toe again. I'm like, okay.
Not just any fullback.
James Tedesco.
James Tedesco.
I'm like, he's going to turn around and get this one. Nah, Bezza gets the ball, plants the ball down for one of the try contenders of try of the year already after round three. But what I loved about this one was also in his post-match interview, Bezza.
With Tiana Benatani.
With Tiana Benatani, yes. Yeah, she asked the question. And then, you know, he gave a huge shout-out to a close friend of his.
I want you to take us through this try. Is this something that you practice at training, or was this just pure instinct from you? You saw the opportunity, get a little grubber in, regathered, grubber again. It looked like it was for Nathan, but you ended up getting it yourself.
You wouldn't believe it. Actually, Mary Fowler, my sister, taught me a few tricks and then passed it from Claire's down to me. You know, they definitely gave me the tools and technique to obviously do that. That's a one-off. That's never going to happen again. And yeah, really happy with the result.
Very good. She's got a big game tomorrow night. Any words to her?
Yeah, all the best, sister. And yeah, God bless.
One of the great characters in the game. Unbelievable try. You know, there's a famous coach out there. His name's Robbie Deans. He's done the Crusaders. He's done the Wallabies. His famous line to players, if you haven't practiced it at training, don't you dare pull it out in the game. Someone like Brian. Has he practiced that?
Yeah, he would
be doing it. I know he jokes off and flips it off like, nah, just instinct. But, you know, does he practice those type of those things so it's not not like a fluke or guessing on the game? Well, it's deliberate.
Funny you say that. A few minutes before, they done another shift. Bezza gets the ball. There's defenders there. He tries putting in the grubber. Unfortunately for him, the Roosters player put his foot out. So it is something that he's, you know, used to been practicing. Also on the back of that, you know, if you didn't know that, Mary Fowler, PNG star, also Matilda, the partner
they just
Nathan,
lost on the
Nathan
weekend
Cleary.
To Japan. They lost the Asia Cup, so they didn't get the chocolates, but she played a starring role in all those games.
But yeah, thought it was quite funny that the man Bezza gave a shout-out to his halfback's partner, Mary Fowler. But speaking of that moment, Sammy, there has been moments throughout decades in both the rugby league and rugby union, those moments, those plays where you're like, man, did he really just pull that off? When you think of those moments.
Man, don't ask me. I'm going to ask you.
Give me two. We'll go one for one. Who you got?
That's a good one, man. There's so many that comes to mind. I don't want to do the same old like Jonah Lomu one against England, you know, like that's famous. One that stands out to me is actually David Mead's pickup. Was it off a grubber kick? Oh, crossfield kick?
It was a crossfield kick.
I don't know how he picked that ball up on the fly one hand.
One hand, it bounced.
It was like
he catches
a millimetre away from the millimetre.
Catches
away from
it on outside the field of play and then holds it to his body.
And then puts it down. Like, to me, that was freakish. That's freakish skills.
I'm going
to
go Roger Toivasashek, that left foot step that he puts
on. We talked about that footwork the other week, didn't we?
And that little space he just made, I think it might have been
a
young,
phone booth.
Didn't have much room to work with. Just puts the left foot in and then goes in untouched.
Like,
but it's like,
on
how
the inside,
the
you're
he
thinking,
make?
Oh man, he's definitely going to go back on the inside. I don't know how you shape to go inside, still go inside, but then bounce
and
out.
Steps out and then breaks the ankles of the defender.
Yeah, okay. My final one, probably I'm thinking on the spot here from Union. It wasn't him that scored, but Manasa Matele. Similar thing towards the sideline when he was playing for the Crusaders in 2019. I don't know how he was about to go out. He was sliding out and he flicks this ball around his back while he's sliding on the ground and it goes to Richie Moonga and he steams through and scores. And I was just like, how did he do that? That's freakish.
Yeah, my last one will have to go to the Kaz Lima Sopoanga to have the Kahunas to do the...
Did they score off that backwards kick?
They didn't score off it, but it was one where they got the ball back, they made a break, and it was a good...
Straight out of the Tony Brown playbook,
yeah,
off the line
the ball,
out.
Turns around, pretends the dummy, kicks it over his head, and then they regather.
Ah, that's special. Special talent in our games.
Some notable mentions to the great man, Benji Marshall.
Bringing the
double step, the flick in the grand final, and also Carlos Spencer.
Oh, the GOAT, Carlos Spencer. His son made his debut on the weekend
for
the Auckland Blues against the Waratahs.
But, yep, the Panthers, too strong for the Roosters. I think they're going to be very hard to beat. You know what? I have this feeling that they might go. Could they go undefeated?
I like. You know why? I'm hearing you on this because I love the energy that was in the change room after when they were singing. Not Leka Halasima, was the
Dimitrik.
Dimitrik, I think that was him leading the charge.
Oh, you're going Warriors. I thought I said the
Panthers.
Oh,
sorry.
But yep, Demetric. Warriors. Are you going them undefeated?
No. I think Warriors and Panthers are just showing unbelievable signs that the new rules aren't affecting them.
Fit. Good preseason.
Yep.
But the Broncos, they got their season finally to a start with their first win in the grand final rematch. 18-14, they beat the Storm in Melbourne. Two tries to Jordan Ricci and one to the Tongan centre, Katoni Stags. For the Storm, Sualavi Fa'alongo and also Joe Chan scored tries. Also getting their first wins were the Cowboys. They beat the Titans 30-16, two tries to Murray Taulangi. But, Sammy, your cuz, Isaiah Katoa, for the Dolphins, they go down to Cronulla, beat them 38-10, but it was that long ball that caught everyone's eyes, that long cutout. It comes off a second phase play, so they shift it down to the left. There was a bit of an offload. They come back. Herbie skips back to the middle, gets the ball to Isaiah Katoa, and then he just sees numbers, sees space, and rips this perler left to right
left
cutout
to
ball
right.
And lands it straight on Jermaine Isakul.
Long ball goes right to Isaiah Katoa to the 10. Fires a miracle pass and a miracle lead by Isaka to score. What a try, Dolphins!
I taught him that, T.
Did you?
Yep. Like his field goal, taught him that.
Okay. What did you teach Patrick Pellegrini then?
How to miss tackles.
Joking. Wow. Okay.
Nah,
we're going there.
Hey, he can throw a long ball too, old Paddy. He can goal kick. He's going all right.
Yeah, hey, and just with the Tigers as well, they lost to the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Jerome Luai goes down with a knee injury.
Is it bad? Have the results come out yet?
4 weeks he's looking to miss.
Well, it's not
possibly
too bad,
4 weeks, but to miss your captain.
Exactly.
Not great news after the loss to the Bunnies. Now, Warrior, like we mentioned earlier in the show, the Warriors are on top of the NRL ladder after three games. They sit equal with the Panthers, undefeated. And then at the bottom, we probably picked this one at the start of the year, the Dragons and the Titans. Still yet to win a game. I think the Dragons have been close, but just unable to, you know, with that first round game and taking the Bulldogs to the golden point and then having some tight games after, they just haven't been able to transition.
Seen some of those clips from the game where they had some, like, you know, 4 or 3 player overlaps and just not converting into points. They're going to have to look at their attack, but yeah, it's looking like a tough season for them.
Sorry, the Seagulls are also at the bottom and they had a bye, so. Yeah, look, three teams without a win, and my poor Roosters sitting at 14th as well with just only one win. But you can hear every game live on ABC Radio Australia every weekend. Now let's head over to Rugby Union.
Hello, my name's Alana Sikimedi, and you're listening to Nijin Footy.
Yes, T, we are on to Rugby Union, and it wasn't a good day for our Pacific Island men, as we said in the intro there. The Fijian Drua, we'll start with them. They went down to the Queensland Reds in Lotoka, 21-6. And look, the Reds haven't won in Fiji ever. I think it's in their past three games. They've probably been the most disappointing to watch being over in Fiji. It's like they haven't adapted to the conditions well, but if there was a clear sign that they wanted to turn things around this time around, it was straight off the kickoff. We saw Filippo Dangunu, the Fijian Reds winger. He chased this kickoff that nice height, got to about the 22, plenty of hang time on it, and he's come through and absolutely put Fijian Drua halfback Frank Lamani into next week. So that was right off the get-go, and I was like, oh, okay, they've stepped up here for the physical challenge, the Reds. And to be honest, that's what set the tone for that whole game. I thought the Reds did such a good job at getting the balance right with chancing their arm, using the ball, getting the offloads away, still playing with a bit of flair. But also if they were in the rough, you know, if the momentum wasn't with them, they played a really strong kicking game. And that's what got them through in the end. And they backed their defense. Like, they were putting on shots, coming off the line and sending the Drua backwards. But disappointing for the Drua not to score any points. I thought they were very flat when it comes to their attack.
Was it one of those games where it was grindy set for set, or were they on the back foot the majority of the game?
Like, they stayed in the contest, through a couple of penalty goals. But it's a good point that you sort of bring up in terms of I just don't see him as that type of team to grind out a win.
So
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Going back to some of your comments earlier in the season where playing too much structure within the walls or the, you know, within the game plan, but it goes against who they are.
And when I'm still trying to figure out their attack when it comes to that, because if I think about, what you've just said there, what are their strengths? You know, it's ball in hand. It's stringing phases together.
Second phase plays.
Absolutely. Just building phases until some of those players come out of system and there'll be some freakish play that allows them to get on a roll. And
like a little offload or exactly a long ball for a skip and then one-hand offload and then there you go.
That's it. Or penalty, quick tap and go.
Yeah.
And they played their best footy probably at the right on the stroke of half time. That's what they should have scored, but they dropped the ball nearly over the line. And that's when they look their best. Mm-hmm. But when I see what they're trying to do now, I know kicking is a big part of rugby, especially what a box kick is? You know what a box kick is?
Yeah, from the dummy half and he...
Dummy half, how good's that?
Dummy half back.
From the half back.
The half back.
Scrum half.
Brings the ball out, kicks it over the top of the ruck. And
yes.
And just pops it up in the air like a box kick.
Yeah, that's a boxy. So like, you know, it's a big attacking weapon because you're trying to put a contestable up for your wingers to come through and get that 50-50 contest. And if you don't, you can make it, you know, scrappy on the ground. You can get defensive line set and you can go again. But the Drua, I just thought they kicked too much possession away doing that. Like in middle of the field stuff or just
where
out inside the 15.
Take the, like hold the ball and have
hold
a crack
hold the ball
at
and
it.
Have a crack.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't see the Drua wingers being like world class at taking those every single time. Say like a South Africa, say like an England or some New Zealand teams.
They need the ball in their hands.
They need ball in hand. And when I think about other parts where they kicked, and this is not wrong what they're doing, but like Isaiah Armstrong Ravula, he kicked a 50-22 twice in the game, the equivalent of a 40-20. But when it goes to their line out and they get the line out inside the 22, it's very hard to capitalize on that momentum if your line out is operating at 71%. Like the good teams operate at closer to 90%. So it's, yes, you've done some good things. You've kicked it into the corner and you've won that possession back. But that good work gets undone because you're not good at the other side of things, you know, to put it all together. So it's like they've got a kick strategy, which is important, but it's like, okay, how do you kick counter as well? Like with your run, pass, kick back threats, are you organized? There's so much stuff in a kick battle off a box kick or kicking cross field that you have to do off the ball to be organized to go to the next phase.
What's the answer for?
I think it's just hold the ball. Honestly, like...
Who do we need to call? Nems?
Nems. You know what? We'll talk to Nems on Friday. I was like, Kaz, can you guys hold the ball? Because it is risky. Don't get me wrong. Like playing with a lot of phases in this day and age, the risk of turnover and giving away a penalty is high.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the Drua's DNA. That's what gets teams nervous. If they want to start playing like everyone else, I just think, well, we're not looking, and that's what we don't look phased. And that's what the Reds did, even though they got that 50-22. Most teams would be like, oh, they've got it, their heads down. But the Reds were like, whatevs. We'll just probably win it in the next three phases. We'll win it at the line out, and we'll get the ball back at some point. So that's.
Is it easier to defend the try line as well in rugby union?
Because you've got more numbers in the front line.
Yeah.
So they're happy to.
So it might be better for Fiji to attack from the middle of the field.
That's spot on because you're going to hold. Space. You're going to hold three back there.
Three out of the defensive line. Yeah.
So I think
all right,
that's.
I'll
where
make
that,
the call.
Okay. So you ask that question on Friday. But anyway, that was my sort
take
of takeaway from that one. But for Moana Pacifica, they played the Crusaders, and if you listen to Friday's show, I said I didn't get my math right, but if Moana can break up the game into 10-minute blocks and compete hard and see if they can win as many 10-minute blocks as possible or keep it tight in those 10-minute blocks. So four in the first half, four in the second half. I think that would give themselves a chance. And did you see the score at halftime?
No, I didn't. I didn't even see the score.
Yeah, it's hard to watch rugby. I get that. It's not on free.
Anytime.
But it was 17-14 to the Crusaders, but it was actually 14-12 to Moana at the 30th minute mark. So they were hanging tough in there and they were playing and confidence was building. But
and
man,
then they leaked that many tries, man, in the second.
From the 50th minute to the 65th minute. So in a 15-minute period, 28 points were scored.
Through fatigue?
Lester Fainga-Anuku off the bench came on and just had a field day. Just really changed momentum.
Oh, for the Crusaders.
For the Crusaders.
Yeah.
And when you look at what Moana are doing, there's nothing wrong with their game plan. Absolutely nothing wrong with what they're trying to achieve. Even systematically in defense, they are, you know, holding their own, like in a sense where it's not like they're rushing out of the line or trying to do anything different. It's the fact that they're probably missing some world-class players to change momentum, to change things if pressure's on, just to stay solid. And that's what Artie was last year, because there was times where I think it was at halftime one of the games where they were down by 40 and they scored 40 points in the second half because that was off the back of Artie changing the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, everyone's now looking around to someone else like, oh, how do we get out of this hole? So I think for Moana, it is about making sure that they keep the energy and connection high throughout the week. But some leaders probably still need to stand up to help Miracle Failangi, the new captain. Like, he'll be thinking, how do I get out of this? So I think for them, they just need to keep hanging tough and hopefully some more cavalry will be on the way in the future. But
so what was the final score then?
Oh, yeah, after all that, I should mention that bit. It was 50 points to 21 to the Crusaders. So, yeah, tough one there for Moana. Hopefully they can, yeah, as I said before, turn things around.
Was close, you said.
It was close. They won those periods. And it's a matter of, honestly, if they are to go to the next step, it's players standing up and just owning those moments under pressure.
Yep.
So you can't leak that amount of points in a 15-minute period. But if we have a look at the ladder, the Hurricanes now sit on top. The Blues are second. The Brumbies are third. Reds are fourth. Crusaders are in fifth. And then rounding out the bottom of the ladder, we see Moana Pacifica in last spot with the Western Force.
Where's the Lenders?
The Highlanders are eighth, actually, and the Fijian Drua are ninth.
Do you reckon they went downhill since Jamie Joseph?
I reckon the wheels fell off. After,
I shouldn't laugh.
After the announcement that he was not getting the coach, it just felt like I'm going to flog my players. Take it out on you. No.
Sorry, Jamie. Didn't mean that. That was Sammy's fault.
All right, no worries. But let's get over to our guests, Fotu Olua.
Tala Falava, it's Miracle Failangi here, and I'm listening to Nigerian footy.
T-Man, you know, when you think about our big island, the genetics, and if you combine that with power, speed, and footwork, honestly, it's almost like an unstoppable.
It's a superpower.
Superpower out on the field. And you had a bit of that.
I had none of that.
No, you had some good footwork. I know you did.
Well, when you mentioned Hazards, I'm thinking like Conrad Harrell. When you think of rugby league, like those big bodies.
Those big bodies.
Paulie.
Well, you think about bottles. In Union, go even bigger bodies with that have dancing feet. And our next guest, he had that. Mate, he was a hard man to stop. And he carved up in France when he played over there with clubs like Toulon and Dax. And he carved up in Japan when he was over there. And he carved up for the Brumbies, and he bumped me off 100 times, and now he is passing on that knowledge, winning the collision through footwork to the next generation through his own academy called Core Collision Skills. Proud Samoan, husband, father to an upcoming superstar with the Bunnies, and he's a dear friend of mine, Fotu Olua. Welcome to Nigerian Footy. Talofa, bras.
Talofa, thank you, boys. Thank you for having me.
Nah, it is great to have you
on. What an intro, geez.
Yeah, sorry, man. We just went off the cuff there too. I lost my way. How do I bring this back to our interview? But do you want to actually say his whole name, T?
I'll give it a crack.
You want to give it a crack? Yeah, you go his whole name. I was a bit scared. I didn't want to mispronounce your full name.
And I could be incorrect there, but I'll give it a
we'll
good
let
crack.
You,
that's one thing that we'll do here.
Have a crack.
So is it Fotunu Upule Oelua? Fotunu, yep. Yeah. See, yeah. There you go, man. Okay, Fotunu.
There he is. Okay, so you say it now, Fots?
Fotunu Pule Awelua.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. And where is the beautiful Alua family from in Samoa?
Yeah, so we're Aofanga in Samoa. That's where Dad's raised. But we moved to New Zealand. I'm born and raised in Wellington. I guess early childhood was probably the beginning of my love for the game. Mum and Dad, both Samoan. Two siblings, older and younger. And I think throughout my childhood memories, moving here, I guess I've really found a love for the game, and more so just I think the area, and I think what's what's required out this way in terms of, I guess, being on the other side now, the outside looking in. I think there's so many ways we could probably give back to our athletes. And, yeah, here we are today.
Yeah, speaking of your experience, and, you know, Sammy listed the number of teams that you played for and representing, you know, over in France as well. So you come with a lot of knowledge and experience. But, you know, where do you think your first, that love and that passion of giving back to the community, giving back to other young athletes, where do you think that came from?
Yeah, I think firstly, I was my household. My dad's a really, he's a big heart. You know, he has a massive heart, and he was always, you know, wanting to help, and sometimes we'd bend over backwards, right? So we, you know, we kind of have a look and see what we've learned from our fathers and from our parents, and, you know, how can we make it work for us and in our position today. I'm grateful to have learned what I've learned and for me to probably break it down and give back to the kids. So, yeah, that's how I kind of have always probably had a big heart, and naturally, you know, having my youngest son love the sport as well, it kind of given me an easier route to find a way to give back.
Mm. When I think of the first time we crossed paths, Fots was in the Waratahs Academy, and I don't know if they've done it in league. See, there's this tracking drill for defense where I just stand opposite you, one cone, and you've got a square and you've just got to beat your defender. It's a one-on-one drill.
Like a diamond.
Yeah, like the diamond. You can go two try lines. Yeah. You can go left, right, start in the middle.
It's pretty much one-on-one and you try and beat the defender.
Exactly. So when that was a big thing in rugby. So I've just come out of school. I'm 18. Fots, I think he might have been 21 at the time. And I'm lining up against this fella and I'm thinking, I've got to get up on him fast here because he's big. He's really big. And then all of a sudden, as I got up on him to make the tackle, I was like, ding, 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 see ya. And I'm falling over and he's just gone through. And I was like, holy, who's this guy, bro? Who has like the frame like that but can be so light on his feet? And when we think about some of the coaches now that are coaching tackle tech or attack, like you've really become in your own little niche space around doing what you do, but you're actually coaching kids now that being big is not enough to get through and go to the next level. We need some footwork. We need some subtlety along it. But so how did you, with your skill, like why did you want to double down on that?
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't realize that was actually a skill. I just thought that was the way I played when I was younger. The mentality of it, I love the game. And the massive part of it, the game is collision. But when you've got ball in hand, you know, the lights are on you. And I don't think we highlight that enough in terms of giving more to the players around the ball carry. And I think the ball carry is probably the most exciting skill and aspect of the game. You know, we have to score points with the ball in hand. My understanding was, you know, that's funny because I'm putting my old man on a pedestal here, but he was a heavyweight champion boxer in 1981 in New Zealand. And I don't think he probably could articulate the benefits of what boxing could give you. But and I remember being in the garage with my old man or in the carport, and we'd be doing a lot of calf work and a lot of bouncing and a lot of coordination work that I didn't know if it was coordination. But my dad probably couldn't articulate it in that way. But I understood the mechanics as I got a bit older in terms of, man, I'm so grateful my old man was teaching me things that would make a lot of sense today for me, you know. So being able to probably look had it from a sports science background. None of us have that background, but in terms of being involved in a professional environment, we're able to kind of break down and get, oh, my dad was actually working on, you know, my feet and understanding a bit more around the fascia. And I probably thought there was better ways we can give the athletes in terms of what you're talking about in terms of, yeah, big frame is always going to run straight, but, you know, we could also utilize, you know, the space. And I was really, really I was a massive fan of Tana, Christian Cullen, that era. And if you watch back in those ways, the way they'd create space for themselves was all through the body movement, but speed of movement as well. And that's something that I was really excited in watching. Today being able to give it back to the kids.
You reminded me when you said you know, about the ball carrier and, you know, probably underestimating the value in the ball carrier. But it reminded me of a quote from Benji Marshall, you know, tackles don't win games, points do. But saying that, that's coming from a halfback.
And defense does win competitions historically, but you still need to score points.
And I'm pretty sure his Tigers team was one of just more of the style of, you know, you score one try, we're going to score two.
Yeah, mentality.
But when you look at, like, you know, the size, and one thing I've realized with junior rugby league coaching, you know, some of those bigger boys, and we've, you know, had our own examples of our friends, they've always relied on the strength and, you know, being able to back their size. But then when they get to a certain age or everyone catches up with their size, then they actually don't have those tools to create space, those tools to get through the line. Is that something that you focus on with all your athletes, on how to best use their bodies, whether they're big, they're small, just to give them more tools, so when they do play, they've got more opportunities and more options?
Yeah, definitely. I think I can definitely look at some of the athletes that have probably crossed over codes as well, and seeing how they've been, I guess, systemally coached. So, for example, having a league kid that's probably been ingrained in league, and, you know, talking about Hines Lemoto here, who's brought up around the league system. And if you look at timing and the way he receives the time as a second row, and Rowena, you would probably understand this as well. You guys are probably very good at close quarter collision in terms of time and space, because you don't get that much time and space with ball in hand. Mm. You're hoping to break through the line by the short lead line that you're running.
Yeah.
So because we're so trained that way, we need to probably find a better way to give more to the athletes around that stuff. So when he came into union, his troubles were probably getting the ball a bit too earlier than expected. He hasn't been given the ball, you know, that much, you know, free space early. So I think a lot of the tendencies is he'll run that lead line naturally. But I probably wanted to coach more around, have a look in terms of your space. And also for someone like that ability, being able to understand you are more than just the physical collision, looking for collision type guy. I think if you're able to utilize evasion as well and understand, you know, foot patterns to create that space, I think you can add more to your game. And throughout that time working with Hines, it's been a great transition for him to probably go, you know, he's almost like another back when he's out wide, because not only are we worried about him, you know, running around someone, running over someone, stepping back inside, you know, there's always going to be some advantage there for a ball carrier. So that's something that, yeah, I've always probably trying to push for these young kids as they get older, is to understand their body a lot more. And if we understand our body a lot more, and if we're more coordinated and we understand our co-contractions, I think we'll be able to, you know, give the athletes a bit more around the rugby in terms of, okay, let's utilize that co-contraction in this space to win. And they probably won't feel a lot of that work early until, you know, later on, and go, so good feedback from Hines is like, man, I can't believe I was staying on my hips. I can't believe I was fighting through collision. You know, I didn't even know I was doing it. And as exciting as that it is for me as a coach, being able to kind of help and mentor someone like him, he's been able to kind of take it by horns and make it his own game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about being able to provide so much more to these athletes, because being in the position that we were in the past, if we ever look at the development, I think there's so much more that we can work on and give to the athletes around the game of rugby. I think, you know, the bench press, the big squats, and don't get me wrong, that all goes hand in hand, but I think that becomes the misconception, especially online, and kids think that if I squat heaps and my Broncos 430, that I'm going to run over someone. I think that's, you know, we don't really coach rugby in terms of being able to really, really understand spatial awareness. But that's what we're trying to do in the game, is create space.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think being able to find, like you're saying, Sam, in terms of a niche, but also just going that I think it's a massive gap that we could probably. Yeah.
It's a niche, but it's not. It's the biggest part of the game for both codes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll put it into perspective. We have so many leaders within a team that's you know, vital, and it's important, right? And we put a lot of onus in terms of your line-out leaders and our set piece and everything like that, and our scrum. But when it comes to, I guess, wanting to spend a bit more time around the things that matter, which is the ball carry, we really kind of generalize it in terms of, you know, late footwork, fire and soft shoulders. But what does that actually mean? What does that actually look like? You know, is it a, you know, I think there's so many ways and avenues to create that. And by creating pictures, I think you're different pictures, you'd have more success because there's so many. You know, if I'm looking from a defensive point of view, and if I'm facing Hines, I don't know whether he's going to go over me, around me, you know, and create that space. So I think I want to put that, instill that type of doubt in a defender's mind when I get ball in hand.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much done that to Sammy when he had to come up against you.
First time ever seeing someone like that. Like, we had footwork, but like, not like that.
Does he run through me? Is he running left? Is he running right? And then you broke his ankle. So one thing.
Yes.
I want to speak a little bit about your coaching, because one thing I've realized around coaching is the, you know, it's one thing to know all the knowledge, but it's also another skill to be able to get our athletes to understand it and to listen and to actually get what you're trying to teach. Yeah, I've seen your stuff on social media, and I won't lie, it's some of the best stuff that's on
good
on,
delivery,
on
it, isn't it?
Online at the
good
moment.
Good delivery of the messages.
But your delivery is what sticks. And you know, is that something that's come natural to you, or yeah, you know, where do you think that you've built your communication skills so that people can understand your messages?
Yeah, that's a great people. I think of, you know, when you're in an environment like, I guess, a professional sporting environment, you kind of, there are times where you don't really think about some of the things that you could pick up off other people, and that's something that I kind of learned later, or half, you know, back into my career, in terms of trying to understand why people do the things they do and how do I, you know, use that to my advantage in terms of learning. And I don't think I've always had that the confidence to speak, or that when it comes to, I guess, the game and in coaching, I'm trying to really find ways to paint a picture to the kids that makes sense to them, you know, and being able to connect with the kid in terms of their likes and loves. So, you know, obviously some of these young kids, they love more than rugby, or other sports like NBA, NFL. So we've got to look at that environment and be able to go, okay, then how do I pitch it to these boys that it makes sense to them? You know what I mean? And how do we understand, you know, if we look at certain sports and other sports, we really highlight some, you know, some highlight reels, like a Saquon Barkley jumping over, you know, even with basketball, being able to, the commentators are being able to understand a Hezzy or a Eurostep or, you know, the crossover, like those little things that we should be able to go as, you know, understanding when Sonny does what he does, you know, or, you know, Rob Toya does what he does, like, the, you know, that try scored on the weekend. It's because he's got it in the bag, and we can't do that unless we're able to kind of, you know, put them in the mindset to really understand it.
Yeah.
Hey, bro.
And it's funny, like, I actually still feel like it's, you know, and it seems to be, I guess, the feedback that I've been getting in terms of your delivery and where, like, I don't really, until I'm watching it back, you know, I don't really, you know, see him go, oh, I actually did bring that up. Oh, I actually did, you know, break it down for him that it made sense that way.
Yeah. One, it's lived experience, and you've got a lot of passion. So, like, when you have those two things, it goes a long way for people to feel what you're saying. One thing I wanted to ask you, like, how important is it to you to break down the stereotypes, not just for players to understand, like our Pacific Island players to understand they are more than just a battering ram, but more so for coaches who are watching our Pacific Island athletes to give them an understanding that our players are more than just the physical people. They can be the ball player. They can be, you know, dance and
step
in. Yeah, you know what I mean? They can be all these things, not just one type of player. Like, how important is that to you to change that narrative?
Yeah, I think it's always important. You know, like from a Pacific background as well, I think it's very important for us to understand our value. And, you know, I've always, you know, I didn't see myself wanting to create CCS. I don't, you know, it wasn't something that I first had in mind. I wanted to be attached to an organization so then I can, you know, show out and be able to add value in that organization. However, I've kind of realized that there's, you know, there's so much more that we could probably help to understand, I guess, our Pacific people, you know what I mean? And, you know, we've got some kids that are, who are great athletes and show things that we're trying to coach that is very hard to coach, but probably throw out three words in that day, you know what I mean? Very, very quiet. So then we'll look, some people might misinterpret that as, oh, he doesn't care. You know what I mean? We don't know, but that's probably just the person. I think we need to probably understand a lot more. And it sounds cliche, you know, we need to really get the person, but I don't think we kind of do a really good job of that.
What's Eddie saying, T? What was Eddie saying around that?
Connection.
Before.
Correction.
Before correction. That's the one. So it's not cliche. We've got to connect before we correct.
That's right. Yeah. So see, being able to see that, I think connection is a massive part because they'll see the people external kind of be able to see the value in them, being able to see it and keep coming back is, you know, so I've understood my purpose recently since, you know, CCS, and then it's kind of given me more motivation, but also trying to find more pieces to this to add for us to give to the players. So not only from a physical standpoint, but understanding leadership, understanding voice, you know, and us as young Pacific Islanders, I think it's really, really important that we have that voice. And when you walk into the environment that you walk into, you understand that you're valued. You're adding a lot of value to the club. And I think from a club perspective or an organization's perspective, I think there's an onus and responsibility from their end to make sure that they feel that and they're able to probably excel in that environment.
One thing, watching your content, the one thing I love about is that everyone can use it. And, you know, you don't have to be a head coach. You don't have to be run your own clinics. You can be a father of kids and, you know, still use the stuff that you teach and, you know, take your kids down and add value to your kids and spend that time together. But, you know, it helps them improve their game as well. That's something that I've taken away from it. So I hope you don't mind. One last question from me is, yeah, with your coaching and your footy career as well, but your experience and all the value that you're giving out, what's the most fulfilling part of your coaching job? Where do you get the most fulfillment?
I think it's probably being able to see the imprint, and it could be a speck, something so small, you know, being able to have some positive imprint and these young kids, I walk away happy. I don't know if that's, you know, the fulfillment or if that's what, but I sit there probably really proud that I'm able to create a space or create an environment that these kids are able to go, yeah, I see the value in that. And not just kids, there's parents in that, you know, that have reached out and said the same thing around, you know, how the delivery is and seeing the value in CCS. I've really loved seeing the growth in a lot of these kids. Some of these kids I've had since nine. I've been involved with some of these kids since 9 years old, and you know they're going to their final years of school. Some finished last year, and being able to kind of see them chase their dream and being able to push, you know. And Sam and you guys will probably understand this. During my career, I've kind of really understood when I finished, and it wasn't until when I finished and I realized that that was freedom for me, and not because, you know, of the external and the things that happen or that comes with being in an organization, but understanding freedom is doing something that you love for a living. And that's how I see freedom. And if I'm able to put as many of our kids in our area and this in that type of position, then, you know, I think we've done our job in terms of being able to pass the buck on to the next generation. And I think that's really important.
Oh, unreal, Fots, man. You are doing that in spades, man. I wish we could talk more about coaching, but we'll take that offline, get some more coaching tips from you. But
I can guarantee you there'll be players out there.
I'll pass T's number on to you so you can you guys can chat over that. So, but I just want to say thank you for jumping on and sharing your wisdom. You know, for those who are listening, get over to Core Collision Skills on Instagram. Watch some of that footage. Watch some of that foot patterning stuff. I tried it at the age of 38. Nearly broke my toe inside the garage by myself just recently. So I thought, look, let's stop. Just leave it for the young ones. But much love, Saul, and I really appreciate you. You're doing good things for the community.
Thank you, family. No, I appreciate the time.
Take care, brother. Later,
bro. Thank you.
See you, boys.
Give me three answers for this one.
Yeah, this one should be interesting because Sammy just done his questions today or this morning or well, before the show.
Five minutes before the show, I forgot.
But this is the end of the show where we will play a game of Give Me Three. One of us will ask the other a question. You got three answers and you get a point for every answer. And the loser has to buy the winner a jersey of their choice at the end of the year. I am up 9.24.
I think 9.4?
9.4.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to get a shellacking. My questions have been so easy, and it's probably going to be even easier today.
I've been easy. They're meant to be. Sorry, what was the one last week? I asked you, and you should have known.
I should have known the try scores.
Michael Jennings, the top Nijin try scorers in the top 20, which was Daniel Tupou, who you got.
Yep.
It was Michael Jennings, and it was Manu Vatsavai.
Yes. Anyway, stop highlighting my deficiencies, my friend.
Want to make sure you know it's even. I'm not trying to...
No, I know that. I thought that was a good question last week. Okay, so I'm going to go off the theme. When you said that was going to be your moment of the week, hearing the Manly Seagulls boys sing that Tongan hymn. And when you have a hymn, there's always numbers attached to it, just to reference in the Bible or in the songbook, where they need to go to. Okay. So this one, give me the three numbers, and it should be easy, but give me the three numbers that's attached to reference this song. Okay. They're single numbers. And if you don't get the first bit, I'll do it. I'll say the number in Tongan to see if you can get it back. So that will be my clue. It's a bit hard, but I've got your back too.
Okay.
Okay. So there's three numbers. Ready? What are they?
Oh, you're going to sing the...
No.
The hymn that the boys sang.
Yeah, the hymn that the boys sang. It's a famous one. It's a... But for them to get to that bit... The person leading it will go, we've got to turn to page such and such to sing Hymn Me with three numbers.
And I just got to guess the three numbers.
Three numbers, yeah.
Oh, my days. This is the most awful question.
Okay, but all right, let me hear it. So, Taha Taha Fa.
Taha Taha Fa. So, it's like the same number can be. So, one's the same number. So, meaning one?
Yes.
Taha. Four.
Yes, 114.
Is that your question?
That's my question.
Oh, my day, Sammy. Come on, bro.
Bro, that's all I had. But you get 3 points.
When you were trying to get the question, were you just like blanking your mind
blanks.
And then your life?
I was drawing blanks.
We're trying to prepare for the show, and I'm like, this guy, he's doing his give me three questions.
Yeah, I am.
And he's trying to figure out something, going through the Instagram, going through ChatGPT, and he come up with, all right. Himmy. Now, what is the hymn? the number of this hymn in the hymn book that's in Tongan.
Do you know what? I can't even explain it properly to even say what it is. But all I just know is when they go, Himi Taha Taha Fa, that's when they know they're going to sing that hymn. So when you're
not the name of the hymn, though. That's just the
number. No, that's the number that they'll refer to when they do it.
If you have the Tongan hymn book, go to Taha Taha Fa, which is 114.
Yes.
And you will get that hymn that the boys sang.
Exactly. So when you're at the stadium for Pac Champs and then you'll hear people in Tongan say, Himi Taha Taha Fa, and you'll know, oh.
Oh, and that's when they all sang during the Tongan Mate Matonga matches.
See, so I've given you some information to go with when you go and do your visits into the Tongan.
Okay, everyone, Himi Taha Taha Fa.
Taha Taha Fa. But anyway, that's us. That's our time up.
I'll take that 3 points.
Tell your footy-loving friends that Tinero Arona has given Sam Wax a hiding on Gimme 3.
12-4.
Goodness.
That Highlanders
jersey.
But
if you want more of this type of stuff, more of this type of chat, find it wherever you get your podcast or on the ABC Pacific website, and we'll see you on
Friday. Ka kite.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.